Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. When I imagine Moby creating music for a new album, I think of a guy sitting in a studio by himself. Because throughout his career, Moby has proven that he's the kind of guy who really can do it all. Write lyrics, compose music, play a bunch of different instruments, do it across a wide variety of genres, from dance music to rock music to metal, what have you. But for his latest album, called Innocence, Moby enlisted the help of others. Many others, like Wayne Coyne of the Flaming Lips, indie rock songwriter Damien Jurado, and this young Canadian musician known as Cold Specs. That's a little bit from Innocence, the latest album from Moby. Today, we spend the whole hour with Moby and friends. We'll hear more about the album and some of the songs that shaped his early years. First, though, let's hear some live music. Moby has brought his band to play some songs, old and new, here in the Soundcheck studio. He's not touring behind this new record, so today's show is a rare acoustic peek into this new collection of songs. On this first performance, you'll hear Moby's frequent collaborator, the singer-songwriter Kelly Scar, taking the lead vocals. Moby's at our piano. The song is called A Case for Shame. It's Moby, live on Soundcheck.
Set you up for swallow my name, swallow it down, sing me a song. Shoot the breeze, shake my head, cross the fire, I caught your stare, sing me a song.
That is Moby and his band live on Soundcheck with a song called A Case for Shame, which is from the new record, Innocence. You heard Kelly Scar doing lead vocals, playing guitar, Iyeng Bassi doing some backing vocals, Claudia Chopek on violin, Moby at our piano, and they'll be joined by harmonica player Darren Murphy here in the Soundcheck studio as well. Let's hear another song, again, from the new record, Innocence. This is Almost Home.
Hard.
Almost Home, a new song from Moby, featuring vocals by Kelly Scar and Iyang Bassi here in the Soundcheck studio. Claudia Chopek on violin, Darren Murphy playing harmonica, Moby at our piano for the first couple of songs, though he'll be picking up a guitar and doing some singing for us as well. The new record is called Innocence. Moby, it's good to see you again.
Nice to see you too.
So this is essentially the same group that you brought to our green space downstairs a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So the songs on the record are kind of lush and cinematic, orchestral. They strip down really nicely.
Thanks.
Yeah. Now, is this sort of how you wrote them?
Most of the songs, were just written either with guitar or piano. And I've had this ongoing sort of problem throughout my career is because I grew up playing guitar, but then really fell in love with electronic music. Mm-hmm. And so started making very electronic-based records. And then I'd go on tour and be utterly incapable of playing them live. Because they'd be so studio-based. Or you'd get invited to do something like this. And, how do you, recreate electronic music acoustically? So lately I've been sort of, writing the songs with acoustic guitar and then adding all the sort of electronic elaboration on top of it, which lends itself to being stripped down better.
So a lot of the songs have a kind of, I don't know, melancholy, kind of nostalgic. That last song, for sure, has a kind of tinge of nostalgia to it. Was that kind of a theme running through?
I guess. I mean, I don't have a lot of objectivity when it comes to me.
But when you're done with a record, I mean, I understand when you're in it, you know, you're just kind of plowing through. But then when you have a chance to step back and say, oh, I did that? I mean, we hear artists say that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of it is, and maybe I know this might be a bad thing to say, seeing as we're on WNYC, but I was born in Manhattan on 148th Street.
That's not a bad thing to say.
This is the preemptive part. But then a few years ago, I decamped and I moved to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And because I'd lived in Lower Manhattan, honestly, for 30 years.
Right. And I mocked you on the air for that last time you were here, so I'm not going to do that again.
Feel free. Go ahead. Mock as much as you want. You can especially feel free to mock in February.
Yeah. when you're sort of lolling on your beach chair in the backyard in the sun.
As I'm sitting by the pool, reading my copy of The New Yorker that has some Eric Drucker cover art showing people freezing to death in the subways. So I moved to L.A., and as you know, L.A. is this big, dystopian, odd city. I mean, L.A. County is the size of Belgium, and there's just a vastness to it that, having grown up around here, I wasn't used to. And there are a lot of things I love about L.A., but I don't know, in a way, some of the sort of wistfulness on the record might be a combination of, just the human condition, but also sort of I don't want to be a complainer, but feeling in some ways almost like I was pushed out of the city of my birth, because I thought I would live in New York forever. And then I woke up a few years ago and realized that it didn't, in a way, didn't feel like home anymore.
Have you read David Byrne's recent article?
I did. He wrote for The Guardian, was it?
It was for The Guardian and for Creative Time here in the States, where he basically says, I came to New York for the same reason all these other people came, because there's this creative ferment and it requires, a cost of living that's affordable. And his fear is that, the city is becoming inhospitable to emerging
artists.
And
when I come back to New York, it's still it's the most dynamic, beautiful, remarkable city in the world. But unfortunately, I don't want to just join in the chorus of naysayers, but it has become much more a city for the already established. Whereas when I was growing up here, it was a place where you could come from anywhere and find cheap rent and find other artists, other musicians, other writers, tons of cheap galleries, cheap bars, anywhere to sort of ply your craft. And now I feel like it's the place where people come who've already had tons of success elsewhere. And I don't know. So a few years ago, I did feel sort of like I didn't feel that comfortable in the city of my birth. And so I moved to L.A. because L.A. is big and weird and real estate's relatively cheap. And
is
there's
it?
A whole bunch of oddballs there.
Mm-hmm. And Hollywood.
Yeah.
Some very highly paid oddballs.
Yeah. And often, because I'll do interviews and people say, why did you move to L.A.? And I'm like, I can answer it. in two simple statements. One, it's warm in the winter. Two, David Lynch lives around the corner from me. Like, what more could you possibly want?
But you were able to work with David Lynch while you were still working here and living here in New York.
Yeah. Yeah,
so you didn't need to live next to the guy to work with him.
But it is nice. Like, I mean, I had Christmas at David Lynch's house a couple of years ago, and he's just like the nicest person in the world. So I found myself like having Christmas at his house, you know, like eating vegan food and just thinking to myself how odd and remarkable it is that you get to sort of hang out with your heroes.
And then you come here and you hang out with Kelly and Yang and the rest of the gang. How do you guys not smack him?
Why?
I was having Christmas at David Lynch's house.
He's too far away. Yeah.
Also, I'm little. They know they'd probably hurt me.
Now, Yang is one of a number of sort of guest vocalists doing lead vocal work on the new record. Would you say this is the most kind of collaborative record you've done yet?
Yeah, I mean, I've always had guest vocals on my record.
Right.
But in this case, I actually wanted to, like, normally when I've worked in the past with guest vocalists, they've come into my studio and sung parts that I've already written. And in this case, the way it worked was I would write an instrumental and send it off to someone like Damien Jurado, whose vocals I really loved, and just see what he would come up with. So it was almost like, do you know there's a surrealist game called The Exquisite Corpse?
Right, where you write a couple of words and then
hand it off to someone else, they only see the last word that you've written. They sort of like continue on from that.
Right.
You end up with, or like you draw something like a head, and they only see the two lines of the neck. So making this record was kind of like that. Like I would make an instrumental and keep it incredibly simple and stripped down and send it off to someone and they would send something back and then I would almost rewrite the song based on what they had done.
Mm-hmm. So that really is a very different way of working.
Yeah. And I also had a producer for the first time.
Who's that?
This man, Spike Stent. And he has had such an odd career. When he was really young, he worked on things like Psychic TV and then mixed and helped work on a lot of the early Massive Attack records and Bjork records. But more recently, he's been known for more of a pop producer because he's worked with No Doubt and Madonna and U2. But I wanted him to be involved in the record more based on the like Psychic TV, Massive Attack stuff that he'd done in the past.
So the resulting album is called Innocence. That's innocent, plural, as opposed to innocence, as opposed to guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the innocents of the title?
Well, it's tricky because if I give my answer, it potentially goes really long. I find as I get older, I just have longer answers to everything, kind of like Grandpa Simpson. So the short answer is the innocents are everybody. Because I look at the human condition, you know, we're alive for a few decades in a universe that's 15 billion years old, and we're all baffled. And, like, everything we do is some sort of coping mechanism, you know, dealing with, like, the existential void that we know awaits all of us. And we either ignore the void or fill it with celebrity pop culture or drink a lot or do a lot of drugs, but it's all these coping mechanisms. And I think that by definition, we can't be aware of the significance of our lives, the meaning of our lives, because we're alive for such an infinitesimally short time in such a vast universe. So that's who the innocents are. It's basically all of us, and which doesn't, of course, excuse bad behavior.
Right.
But even like the worst behavior is some sort of dysfunctional form of coping. Can you tell that I moved to L.A.?
Cause I was just going to say, like, so moving to L.A. so you can be by the pool in the winter, is that a coping mechanism, Moby?
Yeah, so I sit by the pool in the middle of February and just think about the existential void that awaits us all.
All right, go sing a song. Moby's here with us in the Soundcheck studio with his band, and we're going to hear another song from the new record called Innocence.
I have an idea. This song involves a choir.
Yeah, big chorus on the record.
I was wondering
record.
If all, there are a bunch of people sitting out there like Laura and my goddaughter Mona, and Sarah. And Dave, you guys want to come in and...
Come on in, yeah.
Come on in.
God, baby.
Do they know the words?
They don't necessarily know the words, but that's okay. The words are pretty simple. And John, if you want to sing along as well.
Do you want people still listening by the end of the song?
And so the chorus... is,
oh my God.
I know there's Mona. I know radio is not a visual medium, but there's...
Oh my God.
Mona's what? Maybe not even a year old?
So if you hear crying during the song, it's probably me.
Yeah. The song is called The Perfect Life, by the way, if and when we get to it.
The chorus is just, oh, we close our eyes. The perfect life is all we need. So everyone, even camera people, you guys want to sing, you're welcome to sing. Okay.
Slipping far away with the world at your command. You sing me to sleep and then you hit me awake. It's a perfect life, a perfect life. I only wanna be here when you're by my side. Oh, I believe now you love me till I die. You will sing me to sleep and you will hit me awake. It's a perfect life, a perfect life. Steps everywhere, he's got knives in his pockets, bullets in his hair. He has nothing to live for, nothing left to say. He's locking all the doors to keep the older wolves at bay. All spoons and foil are all he needs. A bed and some china, a lighter and some speed. It will sing you to sleep, but it will hit you awake in a perfect life, a perfect life.
We close our eyes.
That's Moby performing live in the Soundcheck studio in a version of the song The Perfect Life, which appears on his new album, Innocence. On the album, it's a collaboration with Flaming Lips frontman Wayne Coyne, here in our studio, featuring a sort of ad hoc choir of friends and musicians, our video team, and Moby's infant goddaughter. By the way, you can catch the video of this in-studio session on our website, soundcheck.org. Stick around, we are spending the hour with Moby, and up next he'll give us a pick three playlist of songs that had a big early impact on him. I'm John Schaefer, this is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and on today's show, we're spending the hour with Moby, the musician, singer, songwriter, DJ. He's just played some new songs from his new album, Innocence, here in the studio, and he'll play some more live music in a moment. But first, Moby, we've asked you for a pick three playlist of songs, and when we do this, you know, sometimes our guests will come up with some sort of a theme, and you've come up with a really interesting take on this idea. Tell us about it.
Well, my theme was, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on public radio, but I grew up obsessively listening to college radio. And most of the music I heard when I was growing up, or most music I discovered, was through college radio and public radio. And so my theme is three songs that I discovered exclusively through the world of college radio and public radio.
So where did you go to high school?
Well, so I was born on 148th Street.
Right. We've determined that.
And then when I was two, my mom and I moved to San Francisco for a little while. And then we moved back to Connecticut where she had grown up. So I ended up growing up poor white trash in Darien, Connecticut, which is really odd because I was the only poor white trash person in
Darien,
Connecticut. And oddly enough, one of the reasons I'm back in New York is I'm going to my 30th high school reunion this weekend.
Really?
Yeah. I'm also getting a root canal on Wednesday, but apart from that, I'm going back to Darien next weekend to go to my...
Well, as long as you make your trips worthwhile, you know. Are you a reunion type of person? Have you done this before?
I went to the 10. For the 20th reunion, I was on tour, so I couldn't go. I'm really, really fascinated to see... Because, I mean, I haven't seen these people in 30 years. The one thing that I'm a little sort of like... disappointed about is I think that most people have taken good care of themselves. And because I was kind of looking forward to like going back to my high school reunion and having everyone just be like really like sick and out of shape. And that way I could feel like the Schadenfreude. But I feel like everyone's like eaten relatively well and exercised. So I don't think I'm going to have that sort of like shameless Schadenfreude that I would have otherwise.
All right. Well, at least you'll have your root canal to keep you occupied while you're here. Mm-hmm. All right. So your pick three is three songs that you discovered via public radio while in high school.
Yeah.
Number one, Cowboys International.
So Cowboys International was a band from the late 70s. And it was, in a weird way, it was almost like a new wave supergroup. Because I think one of the guys from Public Image Limited was in it. I think one of, like, I forget the actual lineup, but they had this quasi-hit song called Thrash. But the whole, I think they only made one album. And it's like a greatest hits album for hits that no one's ever actually heard. But, like, you listen to it, and, like, the songs are so well-written and so catchy and remarkable. You just wonder, like, why it never became this huge successful record and why they never made other records.
So this is from the other side of the Atlantic. This is a UK band.
Yeah, UK band. Because what I would do is I would come home from high school and I would put a tape in my little tape recorder and I would sit there with like pause and record. And if
I did that too.
So if I, and if I liked a song, I would hit the pause button and start recording it. So basically, 99% of my favorite songs growing up, I never knew what the beginning sounded like because I only started recording 10 or 15 seconds in.
Right. Okay. Let's, well, let's hear it maybe from the beginning. The song is Thrash, and it's from the band Cowboys International.
When everything is not together, I put my arm around your shoulder. The words they say won't mean anything. Now change the face, change everything, and we'll thrash. Thrash. Thrash.
Remember that song?
It's a great song, isn't
Thrash.
It?
I had no idea the name of the band. Cowboys International from 1979 from their one and only record called The Original Sin. The first of Moby's pick three for us on Soundcheck today. Three songs he discovered via public radio in high school up there in Connecticut.
Yeah.
This next band is one that I've known for a long time. Did you stumble upon Tuxedo Moon while you were in San Francisco? You were too young then when you were in San Francisco, right?
I would have been three or four
in
San Francisco.
Right, okay.
So this was this song, No Tears. As I said, I would come home from high school, and because I didn't really have a lot of friends, I was able to spend a lot of time in front of my cassette deck recording songs off the radio. This song, I'd never heard anything like it. I mean, it's just like one of these songs, like sonically, lyrically, everything about it, just it sounded like music from like a time and a place that I couldn't even conceive of.
Were you at all aware of The Residents?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, Tuxedo Moon and The Residents.
They're both on Ralph Records.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they had that kind of weird sort of not quite rock mainstream, but, you mm-hmm. know, kind of a left turn was made somewhere. Yeah.
And this song, like, it's one of the wonderful things about, like, public radio and college radio, well, especially now, but even back then, it was one of the only ways to hear new music. And there weren't that many of us listening, but we're all still involved in music to a large extent. Like, I was at a radio station in San Diego, and the DJ asked me, he's like, oh, pick a song from your youth that you love that you want to hear. And I picked No Tears by Tuxedo Moon, and he froze, and he was like, I haven't heard that song in 30-some-odd years, and it was my favorite song growing up. And so he was the same, like us. He would, you know, come home, tape songs off the radio.
Here it is from the album of the same name, No Tears by Tuxedo Moon.
No tears for the creatures of the night. No tears. No tears for the creatures of the night. No tears.
Tuxedo Moon, another of Moby's pick three, as we are listening into some songs that he discovered via public radio while in high school. So this is 1979 that Tuxedo Moon did No Tears.
Yeah, so I started obsessively listening to college radio and public radio. And my mom had volunteered at this station in Bridgeport. I forget the name of the station, but like there were a whole bunch of Connecticut college radio stations that didn't have much of a reach. So like you'd be driving and you'd hear a little bit of your favorite song and then you'd go over the hill and all of a sudden the signal would be lost.
Mm.
WNYU here, I don't know if I'm allowed to, are they your competitors? I don't know if you. So they had like a really great signal strength and they had this show, The New Afternoon Show, that my friends and I would listen to obsessively. And I'm pretty sure that's where I heard this next song.
Magazine.
Yeah. They had a sort of quasi-hit, Song from Under the Floorboards, inspired by the Kafka book.
Uh-huh.
But then this song was the first, I think it was the first track off their album, Correct Use of Soap.
The Correct Use of Soap,
but
yes.
But I could be mistaken. And it's just an amazing song. And also they had such weird punk rock pedigree, because this was Howard Devoto's band, and he had been one of the founding members of the Buzzcocks.
Right.
And then Barry Adamson is the bass player, and he went on to be in Visage, and then strangely enough, Nick Cave in the Bad Seeds. And he's also made some amazing solo albums for Mute.
Mute Records, yeah.
And I think one of the guys from Soosing the Banshees was in this band for a while, John McGow. I'm not sure. So again, it was sort of like an amalgam of a bunch of different new wave and punk rock bands.
All right, the band Magazine, Because You're Frightened. English band Magazine from 1980's album The Correct Use of Soap. That's called Because You're Frightened. Moby is here with us on Soundcheck, sharing a Pick 3 playlist with us. You know, that was a great time to be in school, you know, the late 70s as it turned to the 80s and as punk was becoming post-punk and new wave. A lot of great stuff.
Those were my, like, formative years musically. So, of course, I sort of get very nostalgic about them. And I think that, like, from almost like, let's say, like 75 to 83, that 8-year period, like so much inventive music happened. Like it's when hip hop was born. Mm-hmm. It's kind of when punk rock was born. It's when electronic music was born. I mean, like it, like so much music that's still incredibly ubiquitous and popular sort of came from that brief like 5 or 6 year period. And it was amazing being in and around New York during that time because like now, and I don't want to sound like a cranky old guy, but now, like a band comes out, puts out their first song, and instantly every blog in the world knows about it. And back then, like you had to find like the littlest record store. Like I just walked by Rocks in Your Head that used to be on Prince Street. Mm-hmm. And like you'd go in there and you'd save up your money from like cutting lawns or something. And you'd go in and you'd buy like a Public Image Limited 7-inch or a New Order 7-inch. And no one else knew about it. You know, except for like a few people at college radio, and then like every now and then you'd be on the subway or somewhere and you'd see someone with like a Killing Joke t-shirt, and you get so excited. Right. And you're like, wow, we're part of the same tribe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it really was that kind of feeling of, you know, it's like a secret society almost.
Yeah.
So you think that communal aspect is somewhat diluted because it's all over the internet? Or
I think it still exists at home, but it seems a little, in a weird way, more arbitrary now because the music's all just sitting there waiting for anyone to discover it. And back then, like, you had to make such an effort. And also, investing in music back then was really expensive.
Yeah.
You know, like, I remember buying the first Public Image album, and, like, I had to work for 2 weeks at a dry cleaning job just to save up enough money to buy the first Public Image album. And then I took the train into New York and went down to J&R Music to buy it. Was it J&R?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
The only way I could afford to buy the record was if I sat in the bathroom on Metro North the entire way. So I had to, like, I couldn't afford a record and a train ticket. So I sat in the bathroom from Darien, Connecticut until Grand Central just so I would have enough money to buy my Public Image record.
I want to watch it was never made clear.
That's Public Image Limited, and the song Public Image. It's from the band's debut album from 1978 called First Issue. Well worth stowing away on a Metro North bathroom for. More with Moby in a moment. He and his band will play live again in our studio. This is Soundcheck.
This is how we try. This is where it died. This is how we cried. Like the dogs left outside. We were so cautious, guarding our losses viciously.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're spending the hour with Moby. His new album is called Innocence, but of course, there are lots of previous records with huge big hits. One of them is the song Natural Blues, and that's what we're going to hear in a stripped-down, unplugged performance here on Soundcheck.
But God, don't nobody know my troubles but God. Went down the hill of the day, so got happy and stayed all day. Went down the hill of the day, so got happy and stayed all day. Oh Lord, in my troubles so hard. But God, don't nobody know my troubles but God. Oh Lord, in my troubles so hard. Oh Lord, in my troubles so hard. Don't nobody know my troubles but God. Don't nobody know my troubles but God. When in the room, didn't stay long. Looked on the bed and brother was dead. I went in the room, didn't stay long. Looked on the bed and brother was dead. So hard, oh Lord, in my troubles so hard. Don't nobody know my troubles but God. Don't nobody know my troubles but God. Oh Lord, in my troubles so hard. Oh Lord, in my troubles so hard. Don't nobody know my troubles but God. Don't nobody know my troubles but God. Oh Lord, in my troubles so hard. Oh Lord, in my troubles so hard. Don't nobody know my troubles but God. Don't nobody know my troubles but God.
Now Natural Blues from Moby's 1999 album Play in a stripped-down acoustic version here in the Soundcheck studio. And Moby and the gang have one more song to play for us. This one is from the last record, Destroyed.
Sort of, tangentially.
Tangentially.
It's a song called The Poison Tree, and it came out as on one of the versions of the last album, Destroyed, but it was also part of a David Lynch project. A musical project that he put together to benefit the David Lynch Foundation, his meditation organization.
Mm-hmm.
And he did an amazing, very dark, strange remix of it. But the version we're going to do is not dark or strange. I mean, it's strange because it's me, but it's...
All right. So The Poison Tree?
Yeah.
From Moby.
Darren's going to go crazy on the harmonica. Life is gone away, my sweet love is gone away, my sweet love is gone away, my sweet love is gone again now. Look at all life is gone away, my sweet love is gone away, my sweet love is gone away, my sweet love is gone again now. Oh, my baby, oh, my love, oh, my baby now. Oh, my baby, oh, my love, oh, my baby now. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Oh,
Poison Tree from Moby and his band live on Soundcheck, and Yang Bassi and Kelly Scar, Darren Murphy, Claudia Chopek, all with Moby here in the Soundcheck studio playing for us today some new songs, some old ones. And Moby, you know, hearing your pick three of songs from that like late 70s, 1980 period, I just grabbed something real quick, you know, before coming into the studio from that same period. Did you know Mink DeVille?
Band? Willie DeVille.
With Willie DeVille. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always felt they were like one of the bands that came out of the CBGB's era that did not get the kind of acclaim that they deserved.
Well, there was that period, like 78, 79, 80, 81. Like, my friends and I would come into New York, and you would read, like, New York Rocker magazine and Village Voice, and you would see ads for all these shows, and you see pictures. Because the thing about, like, Willie DeVille or Mink DeVille, like, he looked amazing.
Yeah.
And so I remember, like, seeing pictures of him, and he looked like such a rock star. But then you realize, like, he was a rock star to, like, a few hundred artists in Lower Manhattan.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and like you'd see every now and then see someone like him or like the guys from the Rock Cats like walking down St. Mark's Place, and you'd be like, oh God, they're like the biggest rock stars in the world. And then you'd remember, like, well, except that they play shows for 50 people.
Right. So it's like the old Phil Oakes song, you know, outside of a small circle of friends.
Yeah.
Well, but we were in that circle, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was in it as a scared 16-year-old who snuck in on the bathroom at Metro North.
Yeah. Well, I just thought, you know, as long as we're reliving those days, I'd play a little Venus on Avenue D for you to wrap things up.
That sounds perfect. Do you remember, by any chance, what what ABCD stood for back then?
Wow, yeah.
A was alcohol, B was blow, C was crack, and D was death.
Death, yes. Yeah. Right. Those days are long gone.
I'm sure you could find crack somewhere in the East Village.
Yeah, you could probably find death too.
But probably like free range crack or something. Like artisanal crack made by ye old crack makers somewhere upstate.
In a shoppy upstate in Hudson, New York or something. Mm-hmm. Moby, it's always great fun having you on the show, whether hosting or guesting or playing or just talking. And you did a little of everything today.
Yeah, so. Well, thanks. This is really fun. Thank you so much.
Moby, my guest on Soundcheck.
There she goes, in a high-heel shoe, in a silk stockings, and a dress is so tight. She's all right.
That does it for Soundcheck today. If you'd like to see some of what you've been hearing, check out our videos online at soundcheck.org.
I knew it couldn't be too soon. I knew a love would go far.
Tomorrow on the show, composer Nico Muhly talks about his opera Two Boys. He is the youngest composer ever to have a premiere at the Metropolitan Opera, and we'll get a chance to speak with him about that work. We'll also look into a new exhibit that examines the history of graffiti in New York from the early 70s to today, and live music from the Philadelphia band The Districts. That's tomorrow. Thanks for joining us today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.